The U.S. thought it got away relatively unscathed by Iranian missiles last month, but the number of U.S. service personnel injured by airstrikes in Iraq has gone up again. The Defense Department says that 109 troops have now been treated for mild traumatic brain injuries, or TBIs. That is 50% more than the number previously reported. The Department of Defense takes TBIs seriously. This is Pentagon spokesman Jonathan Hoffman.
We have seen a persistent and dedicated effort by our medical professionals on the ground in Iraq, Kuwait, and Germany to diagnose and treat any and all members who needed assistance. We wish all these members well, and we are dedicated to ensuring that they have the support and treatment they need for a full recovery.
But President Trump has downplayed the recent brain injuries.
I heard that they had headaches and a couple of other things, but I would say, and I can report, it is not very serious.
Kate Kemplin, what is your reaction to that?
So aside from those comments being ill-informed, inappropriate, and insensitive, the Trump administration slashed research funding for some federal agencies by over 170% recently. And studying and treating blast-related TBI in the military requires money. Studying brains of service members with a traumatic brain injury who have committed suicide takes money. And those words hurt.
You have your own connection to traumatic brain injuries. You have a PhD in resilience and suicide among special forces and have spent your career in brain and trauma care as a nurse and now as a researcher. When and why did you choose to specialize in brain injuries?
So I worked as a trauma nurse specialist for the U.S. Army as a civilian in the early 2000s. And I noticed that soldiers coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan had really obvious post-concussive symptoms. And most of them, or actually all of them, reported being exposed to a blast, often repetitively on their deployment. And they were having significant personality changes, headaches, marital issues, you know, decision-making issues, a lot of issues with executive function. And so when I started my master's degree, I decided to study traumatic brain injury in combat. And then with life imitating art, my husband, Michael, who was deployed to Iraq, had an IED, actually an EFP, explode under the seat of his vehicle. And so when he returned home, I started to see the same symptoms of traumatic brain injury in him that I'd seen in my patients and in the research that I was doing in graduate school. And so in continuing my education, entering academia, becoming a professor and a nurse scientist, I worked with special operations and began to study their suicides, because those tripled in the last couple years. And the intersection between traumatic brain injury and suicide is very well established. And right as I was publishing my initial findings, Michael committed suicide in June of 2019.
I'm very sorry to hear that story. And you connect his taking his life with his TBI.
I think it's impossible not to. As a scientist, I would say no. You know, that's anecdotal and without any causal data or longitudinal study, you know, that's the scientist in me saying I can't make that connection. But as a clinician and as a spouse and as somebody who's worked in this field for over a decade, I think that the connection is concrete, because he came back after his blast injury and he was really never the same. And the CDC actually just put out that one of the biggest risk factors for a traumatic brain injury is suicide. And sometimes it can lie dormant and take a decade or longer, but TBI and suicide are very, very connected.
I mean, you're also steeped in the science of TBIs, Kate. What exactly is a traumatic brain injury? What happens to the brain? What causes it?
So it's very different in military populations, because in sports or in motor vehicle accidents, the force against the head is solitary. In the military, blast injuries are created by an air pressure wave that is really, really significant. And because the brain is sitting inside your skull and blast pressure waves travel through it, it actually shears connections within the brain at very microscopic levels. And this has been noted in brain tissue postmortem by Dr. Dan Pearl at the Uniformed Services University in Bethesda. So he has a brain repository. He has the brains of soldiers from multiple conflicts. He also has Michael's brain. I sent it there after Michael died. Mm. And they have found astroglial scarring patterns in soldiers who have had blast exposure. And then those soldiers or service members committed suicide after.
Wouldn't those scarring patterns on the brain show up on an MRI?
Not necessarily. There are some clinical guidelines that recommend CAT scans, not necessarily MRIs, but CAT scans to look for really specific physical injuries after traumatic brain injury. But with quote unquote mild traumatic brain injury, it's unlikely or very rare to see something really glaring from a blast injury.
Did Michael acknowledge that he likely had a physical manifestation that was TBI? I mean, what about most soldiers? Are they willing to acknowledge it?
I think it's tough for a lot of soldiers. I think it's really difficult to acknowledge that something wrong might be happening or that an injury that you walked away from is affecting you to the degree that these injuries can. In Michael's instance, he had a wife who had studied this extensively, and so he knew and he acknowledged that his brain was injured. However, he worked in classified environments, and he had a security clearance, and he would not acknowledge it officially because he could lose his career. And even though the Department of Defense assures service members that, you know, they won't lose any security clearances for seeking mental health treatment, I know from my colleagues in the military and my own experience that it's a very real fear. So to my knowledge, I don't think Michael really ever got comprehensive treatment for it. And that was a main reason why we divorced in 2013.
Kate, I know you and Michael Frody had children. May I ask how they're doing?
They're pretty tough girls. They're doing really well. And, you know, we've been very, very open and honest about Mike's injuries and how they've processed it and processed his death. We haven't hidden anything from them or tried to sugarcoat anything, you know, because this is not an issue that you can sweep under the carpet or pretend that there weren't issues or injuries that preceded it. So we handle it with a lot of humor and honesty and tears at times. And, you know, sometimes they're angry and sometimes they don't understand. And that's normal. And everything that they're feeling is normal. And there's no right way to feel or right way to process it. It's just something you have to walk through. And there's really no getting over it. It's always going to be there. It's just going to change and morph over time.
Kate Kemplin is a professor and neuroscientist at the University of Windsor, Ontario. Thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Professor Kemplin's late husband, Sergeant Michael Frody, will be laid to rest in Arlington National Cemetery next month.